Hello and welcome back to the Fertility Focus Telesummit. I'm your host, Sarah Holland, and I'm really happy to welcome you to the second call of the day. Please be aware that any advice given in these presentations does not replace that given to you by your own medical caregivers. You may want to check with them before following any new regime, and by taking part in this telesummit, you are acknowledging that you take responsibility for your own health and well-being. On this call, I am so pleased to be speaking to Mindy Bergson on conceivable options, exploring opportunities, and identifying resources for fertility treatment. Mindy Bergson founded one of the first infertility consultancies in the United States with a background of more than a decade of experience at physicians' offices and egg donor and surrogacy agencies. She assists individuals working through the often challenging roadblocks of infertility by providing them with information and resources from around the world. Mindy is a sought-after infertility expert and has appeared on countless media programs and speaker panels educating audiences on the topic of infertility, egg banking and surrogacy. Welcome, Mindy. It's so great to have you here to speak to us today.
Sarah, thank you so much, and thank you so much for organizing such a wonderful telesummit.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I can't wait to get started and speak to you. Now, before we go on, as always, I just want to remind our listeners that they can ask you questions. We do have a little submit your question box available on the web link. So although all our listeners are muted at the moment, they will be able to ask questions via this form. Please do send them in at any time while we're speaking, and we'll get to those towards the end of the call. Okay, so can we start by talking about how big a problem infertility is in the U.S.? What kind of problem is it at the moment?
Absolutely. Infertility affects 7.3 million Americans each year, and this translates roughly to about 12% of the population at reproductive age, or about one in six couples. 40% of those infertility issues are typically related to women, and 40% are male factor, leaving the balance of the 20% either a combination of both or some unexplained infertility. And today, the leading cause of fertility is delayed childbearing. Women choosing to delay childbearing to pursue careers, education, or perhaps even finding the right partner.
Right. And so what kind of treatment options are available for these people?
Well, typically the indicator for a woman of advanced maternal age who may have poor ovarian quality, the leading indicator for her to increase her success rates with in vitro fertilization is donor egg. And donor egg involves using a woman from the ages of about 20 to 32 years of age. The success rates are always linked to the age of the egg. So if you are a woman 39, 40, 42 years old, but using an egg donor who may be 24 years old, your success rates are that of a 24-year-old woman. So you can see that the success rates for using an egg donor are dramatically increased when you're using an egg donor than if you were to use your own eggs at 30 or 40. I think one of the things that most women don't realize is that fertility begins to decrease at the age of 27. And for many of us, that's a scary number because at 27, we may not be married yet, and certainly our families aren't complete. By the time a woman reaches 30 years old, 90% of her ovarian reserves have been depleted. And so you can see why anybody attempting to conceive after 35, 36, 37 years of age, it is much more difficult for them to achieve that goal using their own eggs.
And you're right, 27 27 doesn't actually seem, you know, very old now, does it really? It's the kind of age that most people are thinking of getting married and settling down. So
right.
Yeah, I can see how that's becoming an increasing problem. Sorry, do carry on.
Well, at 27, it begins to decrease, but by 35, you can see there's significant declines. Mm-hmm. And then each year after 35, there are much more significant declines. So donor egg is a great option for women who find themselves in that category. Now let's talk about an option that hopefully women won't find themselves in that category, and it's certainly a growing opportunity, especially here in the United States, at certain clinics, and that's called egg banking. So they're actually retrieving eggs from women up to the age of 38 and freezing these eggs for an opportunity to fertilize them at a later stage of the game. So, for example, you could be 36, 37, 30, whatever years old, and freeze your eggs, use them, defrost them in the future, perhaps when you've found the right partner and or donor sperm, fertilize those eggs, and you can refreeze those embryos or implant them. And the success rates have been definitely increasing with donor frozen eggs. Of course, success rates are very specific to clinics and embryology labs, so I always caution that patients slash clients, consumers, really need to do their homework on what is the best opportunity for their situation. And an infertility consultant such as myself can certainly help clients explore those opportunities.
Right.
A third option is sperm donation, obviously, if there's a male factor issue. And a fourth option is surrogacy. And typically, there's medically indicated reasons to use surrogacy. Of course, they vary from patient-client to patient-client. But, for example, I've had clients who were born without a uterus or may have a medical condition that precluded them from exploring surrogacy. They may have undergone chemotherapy. So there's a myriad of reasons why somebody would choose to use surrogacy. Surrogacy is also a very popular option for same-sex couples. And so I think those are the four main options. There's another option available in the United States called embryo donation, sometimes called embryo adoption. I think the two names, donation and adoption, get interchanged, yet they are very different models. Embryo adoption has been less popular than anyone has thought in the past, but the main reason it's been less popular is because typically they are frozen embryos that have been in perpetual storage because families have completed their families and no longer choose to use these embryos, and then they get donated to another family. But the issue is that there is a full biological sibling out there, and so it really hasn't been the most favorable option when it comes to exploring opportunities in the infertility world.
Right. It's a wide range of different solutions there, isn't there? And as you say, there'll be different solutions will be suited to different people according to what their situation is at the time.
Yes,
can you give us some information?
Can
you give us some information about what kind of costs would be involved for these different treatments?
Mm-hmm. Costs in the United States vary regionally across the United States. So I'm going to give you a wide range of fees, and they're all going to be in U.S. dollars, but the cost of a typical IVF cycle using your own eggs, your partner's sperm, is about $8,000 to $18,000, depending on where you are in the country. If you were to use an egg donor, those costs can escalate about $5,000 to $10,000 for the medical costs. And if you were to use a surrogate, they probably increase about $8,000 to $12,000.
Right, so it's not a cheap thing to do, is it? You know, IVF is already expensive enough, isn't it, when you have to look at these other options. It really does add up.
It really does add up. And unfortunately, there's very few insurance benefits that cover everything. And, of course, our system is so different than your system in the United Kingdom. But insurance is very specific to the policyholder. And what I can say about insurance in general in the United States is that it's limited at best.
Yeah.
So it's very important to focus on what are your total financial reserves available with which to explore treatment. And one of the things I'm very conscious about from the very beginning when I'm working with my clients is to start at the end. What is the end family building goal? How many children would make your family complete? What is your wish list is what I say to them. And we try to work backwards. Given how many children we're looking to conceive and how much money we have available, sometimes it helps to put into context how many cycles we can explore. And sometimes knowing how many cycles we can explore given a particular success rate helps quantify and put parameters around when to change the course of treatment. And so it's, and again, very individual and different for everybody, but I think it acts as a very nice guideline as to if we do one cycle with my own eggs and it doesn't work, perhaps we'll explore a second, and then maybe by the third time we know our dollars need to be spent on an egg donor or a surrogate, again, depending on the situation. But at least it helps quantify and give you a guideline to follow.
Absolutely. I think that's so useful to have that plan, isn't it? And whatever your fertility outlook is, it's really good to have a plan ahead, especially when you're talking about finances as well. It lets you know what to expect and what kind of boundaries you're willing to go up to. Do you have any tips or advice on how couples can finance their fertility treatments?
Yes, I do. And there are several ways to finance fertility treatments. In fact, some fertility centers here in the United States offer financing programs. So that would be another thing that an infertility consultant would be able to help you with, identifying a fertility center that could offer you those benefits. There are other ways, conventional loans, home equity loans, borrowing from retirement accounts. And not every option is suitable to each individual, but I highly recommend exploring all options and then working with a tax professional to determine what is the best option for your given situation. I do have available on my website a free download. It's an ebook that's written all about financing fertility treatment. You can access it on the home page of my website. If you just enter in your email address, it'll automatically populate. Again, not every option in that book may be applicable to you, but certainly there's a myriad of things to think about and also questions you should ask your human resources department, because here in the United States there are often hidden benefits that we can explore through our place of business to help offset some of the costs and use pre-tax dollars to pay for the cost of medical treatment. So I talk a little bit about that in the ebook, as well as financing through fertility centers. So it might be a good resource for your audience.
Right. So there might be more options available than people are aware of, really. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting to investigate and explore. Great. Now, one of the options you talked about there was surrogacy. I know that many people listening, that might not be something they're very aware of and don't really know. It's a bit of a taboo subject sometimes as well, isn't it? And it's not talked about very much, unfortunately. But can you give us a bit more information about surrogacy and what's involved with it?
I would love to, because surrogacy is one of those topics and journeys that requires so many moving pieces and so many things to put together before you go through a surrogacy that I really spend a good 3 months, what I call building the foundation with my clients who are going through surrogacy. And I know that there are many countries around the world that absolutely just deem surrogacy illegal. In fact, there are many states, even in the United States, that consider surrogacy illegal. So I highly recommend doing your homework and really understanding all that's involved with accomplishing a surrogacy. And maybe if I could just start off by explaining the two different types of surrogacy, that would help clarify things for the audience a bit. But there's two forms of surrogacy, gestational and traditional. Gestational surrogates is when they are not biologically related to the embryo. And in many states here in the United States, this allows the intended parents to get on the birth certificate immediately at birth or shortly thereafter birth without having to go through any sort of formal adoption. So gestational surrogacy is something that we use a lot in the United States. Traditional surrogacy is when the surrogate is biologically related to the offspring. And so the laws for traditional surrogacy tend to be to apply differently to traditional than they do to gestational. Many of my clients prefer gestational surrogacy simply because there is no biological connection, and the law clearly is more in their favor than it is with traditional surrogacy. Okay. Legal considerations are also influenced by decisions to use donors. So, for example, in egg donation, contracts are also necessary for a myriad of reasons. But no matter what the situation, whether using an egg donor and or a surrogate, it is absolutely mandatory to have attorneys involved in the arrangement. I had mentioned earlier that the laws vary from state to state in the United States. Surrogate-friendly states is what we call them. Surrogate-friendly meaning that parentage can be achieved at some point in the future or at birth. And again, from state to state, that varies greatly. Some states require pre-birth orders so that the parents can get their names on the birth certificate. And other states require a more formal adoption after the surrogate delivers. And some states are favorable in getting the parents' names on the birth certificate at birth. But often, it's also important to consider how the embryos are created and whose DNA is relevant to the big picture. So the individualized situation can and does impact the selection of the surrogate candidate from state to state. So very important to do your homework beforehand, because you certainly don't want to find yourself in a situation that you're litigating because you worked with surrogacy in the wrong state after you've had your child.
How can someone find out about these different state laws? I mean, that's not something I'd be aware of here in the UK, but, you know, how would you find out about what laws are applicable and what steps you should take?
Well, I think it's really important to work with an infertility consultant or attorneys. And most important, Sarah, I think it's imperative to work with unbiased professionals. And let me give you an example of a previous client which I think illustrates how being your own best advocate is just so important. I had a potential client call me from Ireland, and she was seeking a surrogate candidate in California. And after learning the particulars of her situation, which was a heterosexual married couple using an egg donor, intended father's sperm, all their financial concerns, etc., California would have been a fine state for her to explore surrogacy. But I asked her why she was solely focused on a California candidate. And she said, well, she spoke with an attorney in California, and he said California was a good state for surrogacy. So I said to her, well, did he also tell you that there are many other good states that you could work with surrogacy? And she said, no. And I said, well, did he tell you that exploring surrogacy in California will cost you about 25% more than exploring surrogacy arrangements in other states because that particular region of the country is higher? And she said, well, no. And I said, well, did the attorney tell you that he's only licensed to practice in the state of California, and therefore, unless you had a California surrogate, he couldn't represent you? And she said, well, no. And so this is a very example that illustrates how being your own best advocate requires working with unbiased professionals to gather all the information and resources you need to make critical decisions. And, you know, since finances were an issue for her, it was important to save 25% on finding a candidate in another state.
Absolutely. And when you're completely new to something like this, you know, that kind of advice is invaluable. Exactly. You're just going to trust whatever you hear first, aren't you? So,
right.
Yeah. Do you find, that's interesting, you said that was someone from Ireland, did you say, traveled over to the U.S.?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, does that happen frequently? Is that the international travel for fertility treatment? Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, yeah, sure. Many countries in in Europe and Canada, they just don't have opportunities legally to explore surrogacy. So coming to the United States is an attractive proposition, albeit expensive, but sometimes our pathway to parenthood is a winding road, and you know, we often don't have options. But coming here from a foreign country, I think, can be very scary. It's a very different insurance system, a very different medical system, and I think that it's very difficult to weed your way through a system when you don't even know what questions to ask. And part of being your own best advocate is certainly knowing what questions to ask, because the answers you get are only as good as the questions you ask. And so when clients contact me from, you know, international locations, it's really important for me to understand their needs and point them in the right direction, in the right resources, and pull together a team of multidisciplinary professionals to help them through a surrogacy arrangement. And I'm talking about a team of about 7 to 9 different professionals. I work closely with the reproductive endocrinologist and their team of nurses, the embryologists. I make referrals to attorneys in the appropriate state, because the attorney needs to be in the state that the surrogate's going to deliver in. I work with recruiting agencies all across the country to greatly expand the pool of available candidates for my clients, and the candidates being egg donors or surrogates. I work with mental health professionals because psychological evaluations are required here in the United States whenever we're using third-party reproduction, be it egg donor or surrogate. I work with teams of financial planners to help pay for treatment. I also work with teams of estate planners because it's extremely important to have an estate plan in place before your surrogate goes to embryo transfer. And then with my international clients, I work sometimes through translators if they're not speaking English, and immigration attorneys, because even after your baby is born as a U.S. citizen, you still need to get that baby back to your home country and apply for dual citizenship, and then to have the option to relinquish the U.S. citizenship or maintain the dual citizenship. So you could see it's a pretty extensive team of professionals that I put together for my clients. And we work together for approximately 14 to 16 months from start to birth and afterwards.
Wow, it sounds very complicated as well. I can imagine it's wade through.
I said, many moving parts to surrogacy.
Absolutely. And whether, you know, they're coming within the United States or from outside the United States and looking at surrogacy, are there key things that people can do to prepare themselves, information they need to gather, things they need to think about? You know, what kind of way can they prepare themselves?
I think be your own best advocate. I mean, just constantly do your research, asking the right questions, you know, developing a financial plan on how you're going to pay for treatment. I think developing that financial plan in the very beginning will help define how you best plan for the entire journey. Finding the right fertility center and embryology staff are all key features. And I understand coming from another country, you may not be privy to all this information, but thus all the more reason that it's important to solicit help from an infertility consultant such as myself.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it could be quite a minefield, couldn't it? Definitely.
Well,
a lot of time and money wasted, I can imagine, with that story about the lady from Ireland. Can you tell us a bit more about what the leading causes of infertility are? I know we've talked about age-related infertility, and can you give us a bit more information about other causes of infertility and what can be done to prevent this?
Yeah, I mean, the leading cause is certainly the delayed childbearing, but there could be genetic issues, male factor. Sexually transmitted diseases can lay dormant for 20, 30 years, but yet play a big factor in causing infertility. There's certainly environmental toxins. Being overweight or underweight can be a contributing factor. Medical conditions like polycystic ovarian, PCOs, it's called. And, you know, there could be a myriad of things. And, of course, everybody is affected differently. So I always recommend that if you're over the age of 33 and you're trying for more than 6 months, you should always seek a diagnostic treatment cycle at a reproductive endocrinologist.
And have you got any advice of what people can do to prevent infertility? Is there anything you can recommend?
I don't know that there's an absolute prevention. I think that if you are for certain delaying childbearing, one of the best ways to preserve your fertility would be to freeze your eggs. But certainly that's not an option for everybody, not an option that everybody is comfortable with. But if your dream is to have a biological child in the future, I certainly think it's an option to consider.
And that's what we referred to as egg banking, wasn't it, at the start? Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how widespread is that? Is that available at most fertility clinics? Or
it's becoming more available. Like I said, you know, it's relatively new in the past two-ish years. But certainly there are certain clinics in the United States that have very good success rates at egg banking, and other clinics that are a little newer at it and don't quite have the statistics yet because it's such a new technology.
And I guess these kind of new technologies are expanding all the time, aren't they, and becoming more
mm-hmm.
widespread.
Sure.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm just getting a few questions through here. If you're happy to answer some questions.
I would love to.
Wonderful. Let's see. First of all, we have Kathy in Florida has asked about financing fertility treatment. She already has a child and suffering from secondary infertility and is wondering if there's any information available on grants available regardless of income. She says she does have a good income but high outgoings with loans and mortgage. Is grants something that are available? Obviously, she's in the U.S. as well. Is that something that
yeah.
she can look into?
There are certain organizations that have grants available. It tends to change over time, so I always recommend checking out their websites. Those are organizations like resolve.org. I personally have a non-for-profit arm to Lotus Blossom Consulting, and it's called the Jude Andrew Adams Charitable Fund. There is a charitable tab on my website that with an application online and all the requirements for the grant. But I don't know other specific grants that I could lead you to other than what may be on the Resolve website.
Okay, great. I have
Sorry, Kathy, I hope that's helpful.
Great. Well, it gives a start point, doesn't it, which is so important when you're researching something, so that's great. Someone has just asked if you can repeat your website again, so if we could repeat that would be wonderful.
Yes, my website is www.lotusblossomconsulting, and my second website is www.theinfertilityconsultant.com.
Great, thank you for that. I have a question here from Jennifer in Los Angeles, a couple of questions here. She's asking whether your company takes the place of a surrogacy agency, or do you typically work with surrogacy agencies?
Excellent question, Jennifer, and let me share a little bit of my background to best explain how I work with surrogacy agencies. I started out in venture capital, and the day my daughter was born, I said, thank God I never have to write another business plan. A year later, I found myself in the world of secondary infertility, and I spent 3.5 years going through treatment. It was there that I developed this passion for the industry. After my twins were born, I started working recruiting surrogates and egg donors on a nationwide basis. About 8 years after that, it hit me that I needed to write just one more business plan, and that was the business plan for Lotus Blossom Consulting. And it was my business background where that I used to say, I'm going to develop strategic alliances with agencies all across the country. So I went to surrogacy and egg donation agencies across the country and said to them, share with me your profiles of available candidates, and in return I'll drive business to you. But if you want me to drive business to you, you need to put special clauses in your contracts for my clients. And so I have exclusive contracts with exclusive clauses with all these agencies across the country, which state that if a surrogate or egg donor does not pass medical or psychological clearance, then the agency will refund my clients their money. To me, that's what separated the good agencies from the bad agencies, and those are the agencies that I'm willing to work with. So, yes, I work with surrogacy agencies all across the country. I greatly expand the pool of available candidates for my clients. I match very close to criteria, and my typical match time is less than 2 weeks. But most important, I mitigate financial risk factors that are often inherent in the agency contracts. So, Jennifer, I hope that answers the question for you.
She does has asked a few more as well, so Jennifer. This one, I think perhaps she'd need to contact you directly, but she's asking about your fees and how it compares to the surrogacy agency fees that she's been quoted in Los Angeles. Is that something that you quote on a case-by-case basis and that someone would need to contact you about, or how
yes,
does that work?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes, please, Jennifer, give me a call. I'd be happy to discuss with you.
Great. And all your contact details are on your website, I would imagine. Wonderful. Also asking about advice about health insurance for the surrogate. Many insurance companies don't cover surrogacy, so adding insurance can add huge costs. How does that work out usually with the health insurance?
Well, it is an issue, and that is one of the reasons why, and I think I forgot to mention this in my list of professionals, but I have on staff a licensed insurance agent, and that agent is on staff because of surrogacy. Most policies do exclude surrogacy, but there are policies available to help cover the gap, and whether those are disability policies, complications-only policies, indemnification plans. I work on an individualized basis with each situation to determine what are the best policies to put in place for that particular client. Sometimes we choose a candidate because we can get a state policy. Sometimes we choose a candidate because she may have a policy that has some coverage, not total coverage. So it's very specific to the individual situation. But if my clients have a wide range of surrogates to be able to select from, then certainly we could use those tertiary criteria to determine who is the ideal candidate.
Great, thank you. Now, we've talked a lot about surrogacy and had some interest in it, which is wonderful, but not to forget that you do deal with other fertility treatment as well in your consultancy, the egg donor, the egg banking, and so on, and regular IVF treatments as well, I would imagine. Do you have clients coming through just wanting your assistance to go through regular IVF and fertility treatment?
Usually they need my help with the financial planning aspects of IVF or referrals, recommendations, to the likes of that. The vast majority of my consulting practice is clients using egg donors and surrogates and or surrogates.
It is such a specialist area, isn't it? I would imagine that, you know, it's not something that you would be able to gain advice about very easily always if it's something that's not in the public domain always, yeah. Okay. Well, that's been wonderful to speak to you today, Mindy. I'm just seeing if we have any more questions coming in. So please do send your questions in if you've got any that you would like to ask Mindy. We have a few minutes left if you'd like to send those through. Just checking for you. So just as a reminder, your website is www.lotusblossomconsulting.com, where you can find out more information about how Mindy works and also download her fabulous free ebook, which will help you with how to finance fertility treatment. Okay, I don't think we've got any more coming through now, so I'd like to thank you, Mindy, for speaking to me today. It's been wonderful.
Sarah, thank you for everything.
Yeah, you're so welcome. It's been really interesting. It's an area that perhaps we don't always talk about, but is so vital because it's another aspect of fertility treatment that is so useful for so many people out there that are struggling to conceive. So I'm really pleased that you've highlighted that to us today and given some information. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
Great. Thanks a lot then. Take care and bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.